Well, it's Mr. Smashing again. Hi, George. I'm here tonight to confess that a lifelong ambition was realized just a few hours ago. Of course, it's all part of the changing times. You know that everything is changing so swiftly, so rapidly, so kaleidoscopically that one must continually keep one's knees flexed, be ready to leap in any direction. And, of course, the key word is any direction. A-N-I, any direction. Right, a leap. A few hours ago, the sun is shining down. Little I realize that little light bulb of destiny is about to burst over my benighted head. I walk into the chock full of nuts. And quite often the chock is full of nuts. Certain times of the day. And I walk into the chock. And, you know, I go in there for my, be honest with you, I've got the chocolate brownie monkey on my back. Been trying to bust it for a long time. Yeah, it's bad news. Big monkey sitting up there with cashew nuts sticking out of his ears, squatting on my back. Oh, what a bad mother. Anyway, I go into this chalk there, this little neighborhood chalk I know. I go silent. It's crowded, a tremendous crowd in it. They're all standing up in seven deep behind every stool. And you know how it is. And I see this chick there, you know. She's wearing, you know, the typical Cosmo girl working costume, which is roughly 1935 urchin. You know that type with the corduroy knickers? You know the kind? And the Levi shirt, the whole shtick, see? And I was going to buy a paper from her first, but I see it's a girl, see, sort of. And I walk up there, and I suddenly saw this. You know, it just hit me like that. I didn't know what to say. For a minute, I was embarrassed. But then I realized with the changing times, one does not become embarrassed when one is faced with the vast, cataclysmic glacier of the now. And this chick is paying for her brownie and her soup and her orange drink, and she's about to leave. And I just had to say it. I walked up to her because it was true. It was very embarrassing. I walked right up to her and I whispered in her shell pink ear, "Your fly is open." And it was. And it was.
Pop, 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 pop
Thank you, thank you. It's real nice. Do you like that, Nick? Very good. I'll dedicate that to your Aunt Clara. She'd probably like that, too. Well, now, what I just described, you actually happened to me this afternoon, and the girl thanked me, looked very embarrassed. And I didn't want her to go out on the street there like that. And of course, now what's happening is the women are beginning to have the problems the men have had for years. Damn right, it's true. Wait till they get equality, and they're going to find about all those other things. Listen, I saw a chick the other day over in Woolworths. Bought herself six pairs of jockey shorts, just like that. Tried them on right there. Well, now, I'm expecting the very same thing. Sneak that in again there, Herbert, please. I just kind of like it. I'm expecting the same thing to happen. Only, 180 degrees on a phase. But this nice little lady with blue hair is going to come into a Mercedes one day and see this nice young man pushing the cart around. She's going to come up to him and say, "Excuse me, sonny, but your slip is showing." Nice, isn't it? Well, of course, you have trouble with things like that. Everywhere you see it's shifting in the night. You can't tell anything any longer, what it is. Oh, yeah. I'll tell you, I saw it the other day down on A Street. I saw a fire plug walking along the street with feet. Just kept right on going. I didn't say nothing. You don't put anybody down for what he's doing, his thing. Now, you think I'm kidding. You know what they're doing in Memphis? Listen to this. Memphis firemen are adding bark to the bite they place on the guys that pull false fire alarms. Plagued by a raising rate of false alarms, Memphis firemen are taking turns being a tree in an attempt to halt the stinky culprits. One of those who plays a mean tree is Captain C.L. Means, and he says it's one of the rottenest, toughest jobs in the department. What happens is that firemen set up a fake tree near an alarm box, and a fireman waits inside the tree for somebody to pull the alarm. The tree comes in two parts. It's made of wire, wood, and papier-mâché, and weighs about 20 pounds. It's only used at night because, although it's a great-looking tree, it isn't really perfect, the dogs keep coming by. At night, though, it seems to work pretty good. And one fireman has made 10 pinches through this method. He jumps out of the tree, says, "All right, hands off of that thing there." Assistant Fire Marshal C.E. Torian says the idea was suggested several years ago when he fought in the Battle of the Bulge. All these bushes kept sneaking up on him, taking pot shots at him. Says he had a great idea. Occasionally, he says, people will walk by and say they never noticed that tree there before. But they just walk on and figure, neighborhood's changing. People do accept things like that. It's fantastic. Like the other day, I'm just as guilty as the next guy. The other day, I'm walking along Lexington, and I get, I'm just walking around Midtown. All of a sudden, I say, "Hey, I never saw that building. Where's a 7,000-story building standing? It had birds and eagles and gargoyles, people coming in and out of it, and I never saw it before. I wonder whether it was a front. Maybe the mafia's got a thing going down there. They build them up at night. Yeah, it's a front." Fire Chief Eddie Hamilton has little patience with people who make fun of his tree. "That's good tree, and it's getting a lot of pinches." Well, I don't blame him there. I I have often wondered, you know. There's a girl that sits down on the 20th floor here who's our receptionist. And I've tried to say hello to her now for over 4 years. And I think she's just a front. I think she's made out of some kind of cardboard or something. And if the truth were out, it's one of those Big Brother inventions. It's a TV camera, you know. They watch us on the 23rd floor. And, well, yeah, there may be eyes watching you right now. You don't know. It's kind of exciting to think, though, wouldn't it be? Wouldn't it be great to realize that you're that important, that you're tapping your phone? Because, you know, that's paying you a certain homage. I mean, if you're totally nothing, then I could tap his money out of your mind. What's he talking about on the phone? Tap his, get out. Wouldn't it be discouraging to realize that nobody is interested in a file on you? Nobody. Insignificant. Nothing, tiny bit of dust floating in the great sunbeam of time. That reminds me. Nothing. Insignificant. This is WOR, of course. It follows in New York. Indeed. It's like this one critic who is totally predictable here in town. As a critic, writes about TV and radio and all that kind of stuff. Totally predictable. And you know what he's going to hate all the time. He only loves things with, quote, social significance. And there are always things that come out with a big announcement.
The following program has social significance.
And you can always tell. They usually have David Susskind narrate it or somebody like that. That's social significance. And they invariably have, now the future of the drug traffic. And he believes that's the only stuff that's good. So he said the other day in the column, he said his kid was playing chess, age 7. And so he rejected Mr. Magoo. Well, of course, I don't blame you. With a 7-year-old kid that plays chess like that, I don't blame you. No wonder you write the way you do, friend. That's enough to put a boil on your thing. Let's see. Do you have a little goodie in there for us? I don't like to get... Well, you know, you just never know today. It's getting exciting. And we have the spy, and Charlie Finley, he's my spy in the newsroom. And he keeps bringing me these little items. It's the real news. You see, Charlie puts all these real official newscasts together. You know how newsmen come on, and now the human side of the news. Well, he puts these things together. You know, you have to decide what is the human side. And all the other stuff gets thrown away, like items about you and me. And, you know, it's... So he keeps compiling these little piles of stuff, and he puts them off to one side, and every couple of days I get a report from my spy of all the great stuff that comes in on the news wires that never gets on the news. For example, you know what just came over tonight? You curious? Oh, this little thing. You just won't see this kind of stuff. You know, they won't have... I can guarantee you... Chet Huntley or Brinkley or Flinkley or whatever his name is, he'll never mention this. When Billy Felker dropped into the Macon News and Telegraph to ask directions to a branch of the Citizens in South Bank, this is Macon, Georgia, he left his helicopter outside. The bank uses a helicopter to distribute checks between branch offices, and Felker is a new pilot. He couldn't locate the 6th or the 2nd Street Denmark branch of the bank. He's flailing around up there over at Macon. He can't find it. Where the hell he is, see? He spotted a helicopter pad on the roof of the newspaper, and he landed. Asked directions. Well, the guys come pouring out. You know, who's landing on the roof? And they all rushed out, and they knew where the bank was, but they couldn't describe the roof. You know, they kept saying, well, it's down there somewhere, but he said, well, what does the roof look like? I don't look at the roofs of buildings. I said, well, I don't know. I never looked on the roof of it. So one of the reporters got into his blue car, bright blue, and he drove to the bank, and Felker hovered over him and followed him all the way. I just thought you ought to know. You know, all kinds of little things are happening. Guys are hiding in trees. Other guys are dropping down. I remember, though, one time, I shouldn't really tell you this. It's kind of early in the evening to tell you bad stuff. You agree? No, I'm serious. I don't want to tell you anything bad at this hour. You know, little old ladies, blue hair and stuff, and... You know, these little kids that write. I got a letter from a 7-year-old kid who all of a sudden, for the first time, apparently heard the show, see? And he said, hey, Shep! Well, I'm just trying to quote the way the letter went, see? And it was written with all kinds of... You know, it was written with pencil on this blue line paper, you know, the kind that comes with the Indian on the front. And he said, "Hey, Shaq, your program is real good. Please tell a story about Flick. Signed, Charlie Atkins 7. Well, you know, there's a certain time in your life, kid, when immediately, I guess you, there's a time in your life when you figure whatever age you are is your nationality. And you put it after your name, you know, like a degree or something, you know, Charlie Atkins 7. So, and then there's a certain point when you don't. And then after a while, after you get to be a certain age, you begin to do it again. I notice that old ladies, right, always, or old, it's usually old ladies. And I say, "I'm Mrs. Charles Applebaum, age 81. And she puts that on. I guess it's all part of the recurring cycle, which is exciting. I mean, you know, that there's a recurring cycle, right? Do you feel that you have just under the surface of your skin branches and buds ready for the spring? Oh, yeah, I'm excited already. I can feel the spring already beginning. You could tell, you see, in New York, the people, you know, it's people get, you can already tell it, can't you? Can't you, Herb? You can. And well, of course, that's because I'm a sensitive artist and you're a clod. And so that's why you need us. You need us to tell you those things, we artists. And we tell you these important things, you know, like the meaning of Vietnam. We tell you that, you know, Pfeiffer's always telling me the meaning of loneliness. And it's very important to have people tell you this stuff because none of us know any of that stuff. We don't know. What do you mean? Are you putting me down? All right, then let's get crass. Hit the money button, Herb. Crying out loud. We can't do anything else. We can make some dough for this outfit. Play it. Sing it, Herb. Big. The Engineer's Serenade. The William Morris Garage.
It shines like crystal clinging to the trees.
Yeah, the trees, the trees.
Springtime. Happens every day.
Springtime.
It happens every
Salem. Natural menthol, not the artificial kind. That's why Salem tastes springtime soft, springtime fresh. It's only natural.
It happens every Springtime. Yeah. It happens every day.
Hello, is that it? Oh, crying out loud. They were just getting moving there. There can't be anything called ShopRite, is there? I haven't ShopRite in my life. Every time I buy something, it turns out, a couple of days later, I look at it, it's in the closet. I said, what the hell did I buy that for? Listen, I got the greatest looking orange Dunlop. It's an orange burlap coat. Just great. Has a checkerboard. Yeah, it has a checkerboard lining in it. And what's worse is the burlap outside shrunk and the checkerboard lining stretched. And, you know, I keep looking at that. And I never wore it. I wore it twice. It just does it by itself. Now, why pay more? All you ShopRite supermarket savers can save on every meal. Your holiday entertaining. Even Christmas wrap and decorations at ShopRite. For holiday feasting, there's no better treat. You ready for this little echo chamber, then? Okay, please. ShopRite Grade A oven-ready turkey. In the 20 to 26-pound sizes. The price is 35 cents a pound, but don't let the low price fool you. These are real turkeys. They're not them plastic ones. These people are foisting those plastic turkeys on you. You better be careful of that. These are real turkeys. You couldn't buy better at twice the price. Also on special at ShopRite, our whole, all set... American legs of lamb. Just 69 cents a pound. USDA choice California chuck pot roast. 69 cents a pound. ShopRite brand canned hams. Great for entertaining. I love to entertain a can of ham once in a while. Just sit around. We tell old stories about showbiz. Just $2.99 for a big 4-pound can. Naval oranges. Just like the ones the Sixth Fleet uses. Are 10 for 59 cents. At ShopRite this week, and there's a lot more. So why pay more? Get down to ShopRite. Get dullness out of your life. Have fun. Gee, that was a good commercial. I really like that. Let's see, TV Guide. What am I plugging TV for here? TV Guide, you got TV? All right. The real Mr. Magoo in this month. TV Guide. Behind the scenes with Mr. Magoo. Is he really
nearsighted? What happens when your husband informs you that 10 of his friends will be over Sunday to watch 12 hours of non-stop football.
You shoot him, that's it.
A humorous account of the care and feeding of armchair quarterbacks.
Right ahead.
A new issue of TV Guide magazine. In the same issue, a profile of a Pied Piper with a piano, Hoagy Carmichael. A man, his music, and the story of how the 70-year-old composer is teaching music in the 21-inch classroom to a generation of youth. Look for The Toys from Christmas Past on the cover of this week's TV Guide. TV Guide, New York's biggest-selling weekly magazine. America's biggest-selling weekly magazine. TV Guide, on sale everywhere.
Can't get away from it. Has it ever occurred to you that the TV guy, just, you know, they print so many, 16 trillions of those every week. That could be very well the Rosetta Stone of our time. Imagine year 6922 and they dig up a typical TV guide. They'd know about us. Yes, sir. Armchair quarterback. What is an armchair quarterback, anyway? You notice there are never any armchair roving guards? All quarterbacks. Well, that's right, friend. You stick with dreams of glory are always good for you. Keeps your skin bright and cheerful. Let's see, we had TV Guide, ShopRite. Our Peggy?
This Christmas, give her an arpege promise.
Oh, hey, Mom, yeah. Hey, Peggy.
I promise I don't think it's so smart to use dirty words.
Just write a promise on a card and wrap it up with a gift of arpege. Arpege and promises go together. They always have.
Dear Miss Clark, I promise you, you're the best secretary I ever had.
Promise her anything, but give her Arpège by Lanvin. You can give her the classic square bottle of Arpège perfume for as little as $8.50.
Are you a classic square?
This year, give her a tingling Christmas of Jean Nattè. A spray of Nattè.
That's Jean
Nattè. Spray bath cologne.
Come
on. The friction pull of that. Or the fabulous new bucket of Nattè. They're not just the gifts to give. They're the gifts to get. Give her a tingling gift of Jean Nattè from $2.
Yeah. Gee whiz. Boy, I'll tell you, you can tell Christmas is coming, can't you? Shepherd's commercial. Well, that... But, you know, sometimes you just have to... you know, you have to level with your friends. You do. You just got to do it. Like the other day, I'm standing around on the... in the newsroom, and somebody's talking about the Army, and I never talk. Well, you notice I never talk much about that. No, I don't. But every time you turn on the TV or something, you've got an Army picture, and I'm walking down the street, and I'm looking on the window at these groovy shoes. You know, there's something about shoes. I mean, we're having a shoe fetish as well as a hair fetish. You ever see some fantastic shoes they're turning out these days? You know, the Roman sandals that go all the way up to your navel. You know, you're strapped together, made of cougar hide with the silver bells on the toes and all that stuff. And I'm looking in this window at all these shoes, see? And I'm thinking about them. I look at these shoes and just thinking, you know how I do. You just walk down the street. I don't know whether you want to hear a story about my shoes. I've always had this thing in my mind, way in the back of my mind, that the one day I'm going to go to this place and get them back. Any of you ever hear? Is there a place called Little Silver? Or did I invent it? No, it couldn't be. I was in this camp for a while. Let's just for argument's sake call it Fort Monmouth, New Jersey. There's no such real place. I just invented that name. And Fort Monmouth. And I for at least 6 months. Now, I'm going to tell you something that may be depressing to you. Oh, no, I don't think so. Because it's happening to me. I mean, you don't get mad because the Hunchback of Notre Dame is walking around squeaking like that, do you? You feel pretty good because you're not Hunchback of Notre Dame, right? All right. I'm for at least 8 months in the Army. There's a nail coming out of my left foot. It was coming right out of the bottom of the left shoe. I had this great pair of shoes. They give you two pair, you know, in the Army. And you should know about these things. Because when you hear about the American Armed Forces and all, you don't hear about what life is like, the daily life in the Army. You only hear about the kvetching or the first sergeants, or you hear about somebody's complaining about the food. There's more to the Army than food, just like there's more to your life than food, right? These little constant niggling things. Nothing. Have you noticed nothing ever really actually goes really right? And it never really, I mean, all the way. There may be periods when you think it's going right. And, it looks pretty good. And then the drawer gets stuck or you knock a flower pot over and it starts all over again. Have you ever said to yourself, from now on, I'm not going to louse up. Everything's going to work out. I'm going to be very careful about everything. Forget all those. You remember, you ever look in your mind and say to yourself, well, now, there was a time when I was a dill doc. And I was dumb. I used to do these real dumb stuff. And so you say, well, I'm going to stop doing these dumb things. And I'm going to, it's a new ball game. And that's there's a new thought. That's a beautifully coined phrase. A new ball game. It's a new ball game. By the way, I understand that there's somebody's trying to pass a city law, a city ordinance, and I'm against it. Personally, I just don't think it's right. I mean, if the state passes a law like this, I'm not going to say much about it, because you know how it is in upstate, right? But a city law, do you know that there's somebody's trying to get through the city council here a law in New York City against Howard Cosell? And I'm four square against that. I mean, I don't know exactly why. It just doesn't seem right. I mean, if it's going to be a state law, right, or a national law, okay. But the city law, no. I was listening to Howie the other night. I'll tell you, I always have a vague feeling that Howie's playing, possibly, if W.C. Fields had decided to become a sports announcer. I had a little slight feeling. Either that or Judge Puffle. Any of you remember Judge Puffle or Major Hoople? Major Hoople was another name for Judge Puffle. So I don't think this. Somehow that adds a little color to everything. And I'm just playing it for what it's worth. Howie, I may not buy what you say, but I'll defend your right to blat all you want to blat, is what I say. And I say I'll defend the right of a man to make a blimp out of himself. He wants to be a blimp. Right? Right. Sometimes I can hear Don Meredith cringe. Bump, ba-dum, bump. Well, you play the game for what it's worth, and I'm walking around. 6 months, I got this nail coming out of my heel of my shoe, and it's beginning to bug me, see? And the other pair of GI shoes I had were totally worn out. Now, maybe those of you who have never been in the Army don't realize what a rigmarole it is to get your Army shoes fixed. You know where a guy goes in the Army to get his Army shoes fixed? Well, you take him down to the supply room. And there's always this angry guy that's working in the supply room. And he has this feeling about him that he bought all this stuff. That he's personally supplying you with field jackets that he bought, and his mother sewed them, and he's very angry about giving them out. And one thing, when you get your shoes fixed in the Army, it takes like 8 months to get them back. So that means you're struggling around with one pair of shoes. Which isn't easy, because most guys in the Army keep one pair of shoes only for display purposes. That's when they're having, an inspection. You trot out your number one pair of groovy shoes, which you've been polishing since you were in basic, which was 7 eons ago, and now they're polished men. You could shave just looking into the toe of them. They're beautiful. And there's the other pair, your working pair. Well, I had worn out my working pair. Nothing. My feet were walking on the ground. The parade ground. And I'm beginning to get bugged about this, Charlie. I just gave you a plug, Charlie, in case you're curious. And wait till Lyle Vann hears what I just said about you. That you give me the real news and that other stuff, that hokey stuff you give him, you write yourself. You invent all that stuff. Excuse me, we're just getting another report from the newsroom here. It says, a WOR listener called in and says there is a Little Silver, New Jersey. It is located past Atlantic Highlands. Well, now the question is Atlantic Highlands mythical? That's a hell of a thing. Little Silver is located just near West Peapack, All right, there is a Little Silver, New Jersey. Well, I'm going to tell you, Charlie, we'll stay here for just a moment. You're going to have to hear this. Little Silver plays a very deep role in the inner consciousness of my feelings of failure. Now, wait. No. It is not only Norman Mailer who can have an incipient feeling of failure. It is me. Incipient. Yes, Mailer always feels he's inadequate. That if Mailer had been the real man he should be, he would have run the universe properly. And everyone would have let him do it. There'd be a great big set of handlebars on the world. And Mailer would be in the saddle driving it. With his hands on the handlebars with a great big bulb horn tooting for Mars to get out of the way. And we'd have gone all the way with old Normie. However, we all have our own little problems. And some nights, maybe 2, 3, 4 in the morning, I may wake up. And you know how you come swimming out of that fog of unconsciousness. And you don't know what woke you up. And you look up at the ceiling. I do, yeah, I do. I don't know where you look when you wake up. I look at it, and I see a headlight going by or something on the ceiling. And all of a sudden, I see this. And I see my lonely pair of shoes. Just for a brief instant. And I know that I have failed. Badly. Well, it wasn't me that failed, actually. It was Pathaniel headquarters that failed. 6 months. Now, listen to this. 6 months. No, one thing you learn about when you're in the Army, you learn that you are a mere cockle shell upon the maelstrom of life. And any minute now, something big is going to come out of the deeps and grab you by the gazinkas. And there's going to be a quick gurgle and a lot of bubbles, and you're gone. You don't know what happened. Now, nothing gets an Army guy more scared than to walk into the orderly room after they've called him on a PA system. He walks in, and there's the corporal. He's putting stuff in a brown envelope. He says, the orders have been cut. Here, they just came through. Oh, my God. Right? This is terrible orders you can get. And so the orders, you know, it's just true in civilian life. Well, the only difference is that in civilian life, they don't have an orderly room. But somewhere, fate is cutting the orders. And you don't have no friend at battalion headquarters. Well, all right. Excuse the vernacular of the masses, but it is masses time. We are saluting the masses tonight, the common man on the street. This program tonight is especially contrived as a salute to Gloria Steinem. And for those of you who have been worried about that, we're going to salute George Plimpton next week. And possibly we may even salute Yvonne DiCarlo before the month is out. We've been debating on that behind the scenes with Vera Miles. However, I'm worrying about this nail. See, every time I go out, I'm using my number one pair of shoes now for walking, you know, for just walking. And this nail is digging up into the heel of my foot. Some nights I can feel it, even now. You walk for 6 months with a nail coming out of the bottom of your jump boots, and it begins to dig into the marrow. And I would pound it. I would take it into the orderly room, and, you know, I'd ask him for a hammer, and he'd give me a hammer, and I'd pound it. And I'd pound it with the butt of my rifle, trying to square that nail away, but it kept coming through. It was like that pea that was on the bottom of all those mattresses. What was that story? Chicken Little went to sleep on these mattresses and kept feeling the pea through all the mattresses. Was a pea hidden in there by Rumpelstiltskin or somebody? The bottom of the mattress? Or was it Bluebeard? Yeah, Bluebeard hit a pea, that's right, under 9 mattresses. And Chicken Little kept sleeping on the top and kept hollering out to all the rest of the people, there's a pea under the mattresses. Remember that? I remember that. And Peter Rabbit never believed him. But nevertheless, that thing kept coming out. I couldn't get away from it. That nail kept bugging me. And I would go down to the oily room and try to get a new pair of shoes. I remember walking in, I says, I gotta have a new pair of shoes. Guys, get out of here, new shoes. What do you think you are, Eisenhower? And so I go back out again, you know, after that. No, I didn't think I was. I have never had any illusions of being General Westmoreland, anybody like that. You know, I'm just a working dog face, and so I was hurt when he said that, and I went back and I thought about that, and finally I figured, well, I'd have to do something myself after 6 months with the nail in my shoe, right? Now, remember, I've got only 2 pairs of shoes, and the nail is in my good pair. The other pair of shoes were just absolutely just mythical. There was not even soles on them. And so I was stationed at Fort Monmouth, and I had this big date, see? And it was in Red Bank, New Jersey. They had a terrible nickname in the Army for Red Bank, which, you know, there's all kinds of nicknames for towns, like Raspberry Park. You ever heard of Raspberry? And Garbage Field, New Jersey. It's another one. You hear that all the time. can't tell you what they call Hackensack. Oh, it's a terrible one. Of course, there's kids listening, so I can't say all these things out loud. And nevertheless, I'm walking around with this nail in my shoe, and it's bugging me. You know, I'm feeling like Chicken Little at the bottom of all their mattresses. And it's bothering me. And we'd go out, and we'd have drill. And I'm doing right face, about face. I'm doing oblique arch, which is a good one. I was good on oblique arch, and I used to do that all the time. And then I'm doing stuff like Port Harms. I was good on that one, too. Port Harms, I'd hold that thing up there. I had a special rifle. What I did, I sold my real rifle that they gave me, and I made a balsa wood model. So I could hold it for years on end, and I could do all that. So yeah, it was a beautiful model. And you know what was worse? When they finally took it away from me, they just took it in. Somebody's using it now someplace. Doesn't know it's balsa wood until one day he tries to use the darn thing. But it fired pretty good, actually. But nevertheless, I am walking around with this thing hurting me. And I'm in Fort Monmouth. I got a big date in Red Bank. I remember this girl's name was Betty. And ever since that time, I'm a little worried about girls named Betty, especially because she's spelled with a Y. E. Betty, you know, Betty I or something like that, see. And I've always been afraid of people who put little I's at the end of their name, like Nikki, N-I-C-K-I, or even worse, N-I-K-I. Look out for girls like that. They're bad news. Oh, yeah, they usually have mustaches and stuff. So, anyway, their shoes are made for tromping, boy, on your head. So, are you listening, Herb? You're finding this fascinating, aren't you? You're following the circumlocution of my mind, right? And you're finding it's leading you into strange pathways, right? Exactly. That's the problem with the mind. It always does that. Invariably. Yeah. So I'm this is hurting my foot. And so one day I figured, well, I've got to do something about this. And I go down to the orderly room, and the supply sergeant was sitting there. I says, look, I got to have a pair of shoes. I got a date tonight, and I cannot walk in there sideways because my foot is hurting. I need a pair of shoes, and there's a nail coming up to the bottom. He just gave me this withering look. Who do you think you are, Yardbird? No T5 is going to come in here and push me around. One more crack like that about that nail, buddy, and you're going to be back here doing all the laundry bags for next month, which is what they do in the supply room, in case you're curious. So I scurried out, and I says, all right, I'm going to do something about it. So I get in the bus, which goes to Red Bank, and I get wind up in Little Silver. Now, I'll always remember Little Silver because I'm walking down the main street in Little Silver there, and I've got this big date that night. I was going into Red Bank, and I went to Little Silver for one thing. I heard rumors that there was a shoe repair shop there. See? And I'm taking my old rotten shoes with me. I'm carrying them, see, because I figure I may have to put them on while he's fixing my good ones. So I walk into this little shoe repair shop in Little Silver. Now, you know, a typical shoe repair shop. You know how it is. You smell. There's a little guy with gray hair. Yeah. Well, before we get to the thrilling denouement of this story, I have another little rib tickler that I'm about to tickle your pancreas with.
This is John Wingate.
Uh-huh.
Are you still searching
John.
For a good-tasting table wine? That's why Jack Paust created Melba for America and Italy produced it. This extraordinary imported wine is a natural dry wine with a distinct and refreshing flavor. Melba's secret is in the blend. Its subtle dryness is soft, and its taste especially pleasing. Melba is totally different from the usual table wines, so don't expect Melba to resemble any wine you've ever tasted. Melba's not sweet like Sauterne, nor extremely dry like Burgundy. Just expect a new, delightful taste experience when you drink Melba. It's great with fish, fowl, or meat. When served well chilled, Melba enhances the flavor of each and is for those people searching for a table wine they can enjoy. That's why Melba is Melba. There's no other wine like it. Buy Melba today, wherever fine wines are sold. Try it with dinner. Tonight. Imported by 21 Brands, New York.
Oh, John is elegant, isn't he? And George. I used to know a girl named Melba. Yes, sir. That sells it to me right there. But nevertheless, I'm walking along there through Little Silver, New Jersey. And here is this shoe repair shop. Now you're going to hear a sad tale of defeat. I walk into the shoe repair shop, and this little old shoe repair man is back there. He's working his things, you know, and he's hammering away. You know how they look. They always look mad. If you notice, all guys in shoe repair shops look mad. They're always busy, and they look mad. Maybe it's because of what they see of life. You look at the bottom of shoes all of your life, man, and you have looked at the nether soul of humanity. You can spell that any way you like. So he's pounding away, and I says, excuse me. So he says, yeah, what do you want? I said, I have a nail in the bottom of my shoe. It keeps sticking me here in my heel. Take them off. Let me look at them. So I take it off, and I give it to him. He's looking at it, see, and he walks over, and he's got this machine, you know, with the wheel. Goes, he goes like that, and he says, you'll have to pick these up later. I can't fix them now, buddy. I said, well, okay. That was better than I got at the supply room. At least it was hope. And I says, can you fix them? Yeah, what do you mean, can I fix them? I can fix anything. Get out of here, buddy, here. He gives me this little slip, and it had a number on it. That said 60314, and big red letters. And it was my slip. It was my little chain, you know, the little check that said I had turned my shoes in. That night, after a very notably unsatisfactory date at the USO in Red Bank, which involved a lot of tuna fish salad sandwiches and standing around kvetching and, you know, one of those where the girl cries and all that business, and there was some guy that she was going with named Howard who was in the Marine Corps, and, oh, you know, the whole thing fell apart. I come back to the barracks and I sleep. The sleep of the just. I slept the sleep of a man who knew his shoes were somewhere off being fixed, and the morrow would see success and happiness. At 1 o'clock the following afternoon, I received orders from that mysterious great battalion headquarters in the sky. I was shipped at 1:37. I was shipped so far away that Little Silver, New Jersey became a total abstraction. And for years, I carried that little slip in my pocket. It said, all goods, forget it, belong to little Guido after 30 days. And I think somewhere in Little Silver, there's a pair of GI shoes sitting back of that machine with a number, 60341, or is it 60431? It's academic now. I never got my shoes back. I went another 18, maybe 19, maybe 700 years in the Army with one pair of shoes, doing the best I could. It was like Valley Forge, you know. I'd wrap GI towels around my feet and stand guard duty there, you know, with blankets around my knees and stuff like that. But I guess I learned something out of it. You have to look at it that way. You learn in life. Somewhere right now, there's a fireman in Memphis hiding in a tree. Someplace right now, there's a guy lost in a helicopter. A pair of GI shoes or breath in a Little Silver, New Jersey. God knows where it will all end. Just never can figure. Da 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 da.